The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
At the heart of the practice we do at IMC, the heart of Buddhism, is attention. And learning about attention, learning how to use our attention, is an important part of the endeavor of the path to freedom, path to liberation. And I like the word attending as a kind of as a substitute for attention. Attention is kind of like the state of attending, or the process of attending, that which attends to. And attention, or attending, is really at the heart, or at the center for everything humans do, everything we're aware of. The way we negotiate our world is through the avenue, or through the vehicle of attention, or attending to things. And some of you during this last meditation session were aware of what you're attending to, and it wasn't necessarily pretty. Some of you laughed. And you're trying to attend to the breath, perhaps, and instead the mind has other plans, and so you're attending to the past or the future or fantasy or something. And we go to work and we attend to certain things. We go to our communities and our homes, we attend to certain things. And what we attend to, or what we do with our attention, is really central to our capacity to be happy, to be free, to be compassionate. And so Buddhism puts a lot of attention on attention. A lot of attention on attention. And we know that in the mindfulness tradition, because mindfulness is all about being mindful, certain kind of attention. But what's and so a lot of people focus on kind of heightening their attention, their ability to pay attention, which is a good thing. But very important in this endeavor is not only learning to pay attention, but learning what to pay attention to and how to pay attention. And it might be that learning what we pay attention to and how we pay attention is more important than simply learning to pay attention. Certainly, if attention becomes really strong, then it becomes easier, more obvious, what we should be attending to. So it sometimes can come in the heels of just heightened awareness. But it's also a wise life is one that learns what is useful to pay attention to. So, for example, in interpersonal relationships, where there is maybe some difficulty going on, someone maybe is even being hostile towards you, caused you harm in some way, there's a number of choices about what to pay attention to. You can pay attention to your fear. You can pay attention to your self-righteousness. You can pay attention to blame and such things. Sometimes they're appropriate to pay attention to those things. But the whole kind of ecology of the interpersonal relationship changes if we learn to also pay attention to the suffering of the person who is causing harm. And not to excuse them for what they've done, but it changes the whole ecology. And there's a deeper understanding of what might prompt them, what's causing them to be the way they are. And then we can respond to the pain the person has rather than responding to the acts that they've done. So I see this at home with my two kids. I have two boys, right? And they're at that age, which is, I don't know. Maybe it's. I hope it's that. You know, it's that age. they'll outgrow it very soon. Where they fight, and so as a parent, what do I pay attention to? And sometimes it's very useful to pay attention to what's behind the fighting. Not the fighting and not who did what to who, But the conditions, so for example, sometimes like they're really tired. Sometimes like yesterday, they were all exhausted. Both of them, they stay up late, school plays, all kinds of stuff, and tired young boys is not a good thing in this universe. So it's not just a matter of kind of setting boundaries and separating them, but also attending to their tiredness, understanding what's going on there. And then there's more compassion that they're struggling as well. So learning what to pay attention to, so interpersonal relationship, can change understanding of what's needed in different times and different situations. So the same thing, and paying attention to ourselves. What do you usually attend to when you pay attention to yourself? And is it useful? Is it productive what you usually, how your mind usually looks at yourself, looks at your life, interprets it? The Buddha very much encouraged people to practice what he called, the word in English usually translated as appropriate attention or wise reflection. The Pali word is yoniso manisikara. Manisikara means kind of like the attending of the mind, that which the mind attends to. And yoniso means kind of like, has kind of the connotation, you know, yoni means like womb. So it's usually translated as wise, like wise attention. But it's that which is productive and useful. And so it gives birth to something. There's unwise attention, and there's wise attention. So if someone, if you're really upset about something that happened in the past, and, you know, I've carried anger with me for years about that girlfriend. You know, it's a little bit, kind of comes back and forth. And it's easy to kind of sit there and think about it and all that. But what's a useful way of paying attention? Is it useful to keep staying, festering with the sense of injustice and hurt and remembering more and more and more and more all those things that happen, you know, and spiraling down? Or is it more useful to pay attention to what it's like for me to be upset in the present moment? And it's more productive, it's more yoniso, it's more helpful to stay in the present moment arising of experience than it is to be lost in the past, reviewing it and kind of being pulled down by it. And so to experience myself, here I am, I'm angry, I'm upset. What's that like? What does that feel like? What's going on here for me in the present moment? That's useful. And not a few people have discovered that when they pay attention to, when they bring their attending not to the person they're angry with, but they attend to what it feels like to be angry themselves, they decide it's not worth it. But if they're blinded by the object of anger, they don't feel and see the cost it has for themselves. And so then they don't realize the cost, and so they merely go along and be angry or whatever it might be. So to turn the attention, so it's useful to pay attention to some things if what you want to do is to alleviate your suffering. And so we say in Buddhism it's useful to pay attention to, to attend to what's going on in here with yourself in the present moment as the present moment's unfolding. What is your reaction? What are your beliefs? So what are you attending to is very important. And then how you attend is very important. And so part of the how and part of the what, the meeting of the two, is with what concept of self do you apply to the experience you're attending to? So if you're attending to a situation as this is a situation that requires me to be dominant, you know, I need to be the dominant alpha male in this situation, the alpha female. Do they have that? I never heard that term, but people use that term? I want to be gender. I don't have equal time here, equal play. And so some people will look at a situation through the filter of how does this, you know, create my appropriate dominance or the strength, or so everyone can see that this is who I am. Or someone else will see it through the feeling of lack. And they say, I feel like I'm lacking something. And so now I look at the situation through the filter of how can I get what I'm lacking. Or some people will look through the filter of their desires. And so they're kind of, how can I get my desires fulfilled? Some people look out through the filter of their fear. And so they're always scanning the horizon. Where is it safe here? Is it secure here? And that's kind of the how they're attending. And so part of the important thing to pay attention to attend to, is what are the ways in which we're paying attention? What's the how? What's the quality of that attention we're using? And if you pay attention to those two things, what you're attending to, and question, what is a useful thing to attend to here? And then how do I attend to it? A lot of your difficulties and stresses of your life will kind of probably diminish quite a bit. So this is all a introduction to the talk, if I may. The thing I wanted to talk about today was the teachings the Buddha gave as he was dying. Because when someone has been a teacher for 45 years, as the Buddha was, he's had a lot of experience teaching, organizing his teachings, teaching different people the situations. And he died knowing he was going to die. He could see it coming. And so he could kind of plan for it. And a teacher like that, with teaching as a center of focus of his life, this was an opportunity for him to do his final teaching and to do it in a considered, mindful way and to say what was most important. And so if you want to know what is Buddhism really about, one place to go is to say, what was the last thing the Buddha had to say about it? When he had his last word, last chance to talk about it. And there's a remarkable passage where he does this. He starts by saying, talking about those matters which I have discovered and proclaimed should be thoroughly learnt by you, practiced, developed, and cultivated. So he starts off by talking about what I've discovered. So discovered is maybe, you know, is something experiential, something immediate. It's not a theory. It's something to be seen or understood in a very direct, immediate way. And then he says you should learn it, but then he has all these other words that are more important, maybe more important than learning, because of the emphasis, practice, develop, and cultivate. So this is not a religious tradition that says, learn a creed and hang on to the creed. It's a religious tradition that's pointing to something that we need to do, that we're trying to develop ourselves, practice ourselves. You don't just read a lot of books about Buddhism and then understand what Buddhism is. Actually, understanding what Buddhism is intellectually doesn't really, it's like, You could read a lot of books on swimming and think you know what swimming is. But you know, you have to kind of get in the water and learn to swim, really, right? So this engagement, this involvement of practicing, developing, and cultivating. So you should learn these things and practice them. But he makes next is a very interesting statement. He gives a reason why you should do this. So that the holy life, kind of the spiritual life practice, may endure for a long time, that it may be for the benefit and happiness of the multitude out of compassion for the world, for the benefit and happiness of devas and humans. It's kind of interesting that here the emphasis is not you should do it because then you'll be happier, you'll be freer. The emphasis here, this is something you do for your society, for others, and, you know, into the future, for the next generations. And what is it about what prompts a human person, human being, to live a life, to be very motivated in their life, to engage in a deep spiritual practice, in such a way that doing it not for, only for themselves, but where they're really also doing it for others, for the society around them, for the future generations as we go forward. What is it that? Why do that? Why is that central and integral to why the Buddha, what Buddha was trying to teach here? Isn't Buddhism all about self? You know, about your own practice, being mindful here, becoming liberated. Then he goes on to say, and what are those matters that I discovered? So here he's going to say, in very brief, he's going to say what he really discovered. As if what he discovered is more important than what he taught in terms of a creed or something. So, and this all feeds back to this introduction to the talk today, the emphasis on what we pay attention to and how we pay attention. And what are those matters I discovered? They are the four foundations of mindfulness, the four right efforts, the four roads to power, the five spiritual faculties, the five mental powers, the seven factors of awakening, and the Noble Eightfold Path. Some people giggle when they hear all these lists. But these lists are not meant just to be lists. They're pointing to practices of attention, of things we pay attention to, and how we pay attention, and what results as we pay attention in a careful way. So the four foundations of mindfulness have to do with what we pay attention to. It's practice to cultivate and develop our capacity to attend by attending to our body. Attending and paying attention to what goes on in our physical experience, become heightened sensitivity, embodiment in our body, to be present in the world through our body. Many people spend much of their day not connected to their body, not aware of what goes on in the body. The body is a phenomenal... In Buddhism, the body is treated not as a thing, but as a... almost like as a series of processes, but as almost like an organ of perception. And it's alive. The body's alive with sensitivity and awareness and processing and understanding and a lot of different things. And if we're in touch with our body, we're in touch with the wisdom of the body. If we're not in touch with the body, it's not available. So if we're going to pay attention to something, it's useful to have the attention in the body, to be sensitive to be attending to that. The second foundation of mindfulness is to pay attention to the feeling tones of our experience. Because a lot of our reaction to the world, amazing amount of reactions we have to the world, have to do about whether we like it or not like it. And so the basis for not liking and liking and not liking is whether it's pleasant and unpleasant. And so to be able to notice that it's pleasant and unpleasant as it's occurring can give you a tremendous window into your reaction to things. It's easy not to notice the liking and not liking, or the pleasant and unpleasantness, and then have automatic reactions to it. The third foundation of mindfulness is that it's useful to pay attention to the quality of your mind, the quality of the mind that pays attention. Again, it's very easy to be blinded by all the things we're concerned about. We're thinking about things are important, we're planning ahead for something. But to step back and look at the quality of the mind. Have you ever, probably you've had some experience like this, where you've done something, I don't know what, maybe like a painting or a little craft project or something, home repair or something, painting your wall of your house, your room, and you're working and working kind of in it. And then you step back and take a look at your work. And there's a whole different thing that happens when you step back then when you're kind of caught up in the details and preoccupied with what's going on, you step back. And that's nice. You get kind of a more wider, global experience of it all. There may be a little bit of relief sometimes to step back and not be caught up in the details. It kind of relaxing goes on. But then it's possible to step back one more time, away from the painting you're painting, and step back one more time in the mind to be aware of the quality of the mind that's paying attention. So you're looking at your painting, you're preoccupied, you step back and you look what you've done, and then you step back one more time and you look at the feeling tone, the quality, the sense, the experience, of what it's like to be paying attention. And if you step back one more time, what do you find out? What is the quality of that attention? If you step back a little bit and look at the quality of the painting you're doing, and you look at the quality of attention, you might see it's more spacious, more open, it's not so concentrated or fixed. But you might feel that lingering in that attention might be a sense of hurry. You know, I've got to get this done quickly. I better get back. Or there might be anxiety. Am I really doing a good job? Or there might be all kinds of thoughts and concerns that might be there. Or there might be no concerns. The awareness, the attention might be there without any added thoughts or concerns or reactions. And what is the quality of the attention, awareness, that has no connected attitude or thoughts or fears or preoccupations or clingings or worries? Is it possible to step back in the mind, into the quality of the mind, so that you go behind the contracting, constricting attitudes of mind to an awareness which is really big and wide and spacious, kind of like an awareness that has a lot of breathing room, a lot of room and space? And then what's that like? Is that valuable? Does that have importance? Relaxed, open, soft, spacious awareness. It's so broad and wide, it's almost as if you've shifted from paying attention to the objects in a room to paying attention to the space in a room. So you can do that here. You know, you can, even, especially we have this high ceiling here, you can kind of look above everybody's head and get a sense of the space in the room. And it's very different than fixating or focusing on the objects of what's happening in the room. So the same thing with awareness. You can step back in awareness far enough that the quality of the mind becomes so open, so broad, so spacious, in a kind of beautiful way, empty. And so the objects of the mind that the mind usually pays attention to exist within that space rather than, you know, the object is the thing. So the Buddha said the third foundation of mindfulness is paying attention to the quality of the mind. This is very useful to do. The fourth foundation of mindfulness is to pay attention to all the internal processes in the mind as they're operating and working. to pay attention to those processes in the mind that involve contracting, that give birth to suffering, and those processes in the mind that involve release, freedom, softening the mind, opening the mind. If what you want to do is to have a free mind, it's helpful to pay attention to those two things. What contracts, what limits the mind, and what creates the more unlimited qualities of mind. So this is kind of things that are useful to pay attention to. So now the juxtaposition in this quote, for me, is between the Buddha saying, cultivate these things out of compassion for the world, on one hand, and then what you're doing is paying attention to these four foundations of mindfulness in yourself. What's the connection between attending to yourself, your body, your feelings, your mental states, mental processes, and being compassionate to the world? It's an interesting question, right? One answer is that you're much more likely, you're much less likely to cause harm in the world if you're that much in touch with yourself. And doing less harm is really good. Boy, is it good. But then on top of that, you're more likely, I think, to try to do some good in the world, to live in a way that's more helpful if you're in touch with these things. Rather than being in touch with these things making you more selfish, it'll make you less selfish, because selfishness itself is a contraction of the mind, is a preoccupation of the mind. Selfishness decreases the quality of the mind, of the heart. And if you're learning to pay attention to all these things, you cannot remain selfish. If you want to be selfish, don't practice mindfulness. If you want to be selfish, don't pay careful attention to yourself. If you pay careful attention to yourself, you can't, you know, it'll destroy selfishness. You'll see how painful it is. So then Buddha goes on to a number of other lists. There's the Eightfold Path. So it's useful to pay attention. These are areas that are useful to attend to in your life. Attend to, right intention, right view, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness and right concentration. Attend to these things. Be interested in them. Explore them. See how they work in your life. Learn to be sensitive to recognize their importance. And then the last one I want to mention here today is a list called the Seven Factors of Awakening, and which is really at these beautiful, beautiful qualities of mind that get developed as the mind becomes more, as the attention gets stronger, as our ability to attend in a careful, relaxed way gets stronger, these qualities of mind get stronger and stronger. They're natural qualities of mind that are relatively easy to recognize, I hope, if they're pointed out to you. And so the way I like to try to do it is to try to evoke for you, if you can remember, sometime in your life when you woke up from a really refreshing nap, or woke up and there was it was beautiful lighting, maybe a beautiful morning light or something, and you had just the right amount of food and the temperature is really nice and there's nothing you have to rush off and do, and you just wake up and everything just seems so good, and you feel really awake, and there's a kind of clarity and some kind of balanced or just nice energy, just being awake and alert. And in that, if you can remember a time like that, perhaps you can remember that those moments, that there was a kind of a natural attention, natural mindfulness in the present moment. What's going on here? You weren't inclined to start ruminating what happened in your high school prom. You know, the present moment is kind of alive and vibrant, and so there's this heightened sense of mindfulness and attention to here. And perhaps that heightened sense of attention to here gives rise to a little bit more interest in what's here. You walk outside into the street and you see some flowers in the neighbor's garden, and you're kind of interested. You look more carefully. You sense and feel the quality of the light, of the air, of what goes going around. Kind of, you're interested. What is this? And perhaps there's a kind of energy there. A little bit, there's kind of vitality. Not over-energized, not under-energized. It's kind of a kind of energy, perhaps, that's almost invisible unless it's pointed out to you. But kind of, it's kind of a balanced energetic state and that kind of alertness. There's a kind of delight or a sense of well-being that's there. Perhaps there's a capacity, I don't know if it was there necessarily, but capacity to get more concentrated, be focused on what something needs to be done. And most important, perhaps, there's a sense of equanimity, a balance, equipoise, or a less of a tendency to react to the things that go on. So you woke up from a wonderful nap, you feel quite beautifully clear and relaxed and present, content, and the telephone rings. Do you rush over to pick it up at the first ring? Or you kind of, oh, the telephone's ringing. I'll get to it. Two, three rings, whatever. Or you break a glass in your kitchen. I broke a glass the other day in my kitchen. Broke a glass in your kitchen, you know. The glass looks broken glass looks beautiful. As opposed to, what a klutz. You know, the mind doesn't react, you know, so strongly in usual ways. So these are, I think, I'd like to, what I'm trying to say is these are ordinary qualities that can be there, but as we learn to attend more carefully, as our attention gets stronger, these come along. And then what the Buddha said, as these get developed, it's useful to notice them. So again, what we pay attention to is important. So it's useful to notice the degree to which there is mindfulness, investigation, energy, vitality, joy, tranquility, calmness, concentration, and equanimity. These are these seven factors. And these seven factors the Buddha likened to treasures. Not just any treasure, but the treasures of a world-ruling monarch. There's supposed to be seven treasures that a world-ruling monarch in India would have as kind of like as the, I don't know what that's called exactly, but the insignia or the things that are kind of the symbols of power. And so the seven, you know, if we're going to be our own monarchs, we have to have seven treasures. And those seven treasures are these seven factors of awakening. So to pay attention to them, notice them. So the challenge for you, I'd like to offer you, is for you to start noticing what do you commonly attend to when you go about your life? Take an inventory. Stop every hour for a couple of days. Maybe have a notepad or something and write down, what do you tend to attend to? Or have timers that go off every 10 minutes randomly or something. And then say, what was I tending to now? Find some way to notice what are your common things you attend to. And then ask yourself, is this the right thing to be attending to? Maybe it is. There's what you're attending to kind of what it looks like you're supposed to be attending to. And then there's what your mind is really doing. But anyway, so then there's, if it is what you're supposed to be attending to, then is the way in which you're attending one that serves you the best? How are you attending? So those two questions, what are you attending to? What do you tend to attend to as you go about your life? And if it's useful what you're needed to be, or useful what you're attending to, how are you doing that? Are you doing it with the presence of any of these seven factors of awakening? Is there a careful mindfulness? Is there a stepping back? So there's a kind of a wider sense of awareness or space or calm. Is there tranquility or calmness with what you're doing? Is there engagement? Are you appropriately engaged with the experience? Or are you kind of resisting? Is there joy or sense of well-being? Is there equanimity, or is there a lot of reactivity? Is there some freedom in doing it, or are you caught up in it in some way? Is there a lot of self-concept that's being played out in it, or are you doing it without much self at all, self-concept? So what are you paying attention to, and how are you paying attention? What are you attending to, and how are you attending? And if you do that, then you're paying attention to what's at the heart of Buddhism. Buddhism does not require you or need you to believe in almost anything, except to believe that you can be trained, to believe that you can cultivate a heightened capacity to pay attention. Just that. That's what you need to believe in. You need to believe it enough that you'll do it. And beyond that, You know, what does the Buddha believe? Who knows? So we have about 5 minutes before we usually stop. And would anybody like to ask any questions or make any comments? Yes, Jeannie.
Could you just repeat the seven factors again, please?
The seven factors of awakening are mindfulness, investigation, energy or effort, joy, tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. A good question. So the answer to that question has to do with how we attend to them. What? You didn't hear? Oh, so the question is, if we pay attention to fear, does that make them stronger? And so the answer to that is, it depends on how you pay attention to them. So the how is very important. If it's possible to pay attention to fear and make the fear get stronger and people go into panic attacks. It's also possible to pay attention to fear in a different way and the fear dissipates. One is if we're caught by our fear, if we're believing our fear, and if we're paying attention to it by telling ourselves more and more stories, then you probably get more afraid. But if you pay attention to it without telling stories, without adding to stories more and more to it, if you pay attention to it by stepping back and feeling it in your body, feeling it as a process here and now, then chances are that you're not going to fuel it anymore, and it'll soften. That's why it's very important to understand it's not only a matter of paying attention, but it's very important to understand how you pay attention. Because you could say, I'm paying attention to my fear all day, thank you. That's all I pay attention to. And it just gets worse, right? On the way back, if you can pass it, the mic. We use the mic. Some people use hearing assistant devices, so.
Make sure the green light's on.
So the question is if you're just starting out and you can't pay attention for more than 10 or 20 seconds, where do you start out? You start there. That's a good place to begin. 20 seconds is really good. So this is an example. So you're starting out, and you try to pay attention. You do it for 20 seconds. And then what happens? What happens right after that?
After that, my mind goes a million different places to my fears or even the mundane, like what I should pick up at the grocery store on the way home.
Mm-hmm. So then you have a choice. You could either come back to what the breath, for example, for another 20 seconds, or maybe next time it's 21 seconds. Slowly it gets stronger. The other thing you could do is if the mind is forcefully kind of preoccupied by something, then perhaps what's useful is not to focus on the breath, but to step back. Just take a step back and notice, I'm thinking about going shopping, all the things I have to do. My mind is thinking, this is what a mind is like that has 10,000 things on its mind. And let me take my 20 seconds that I get and notice 20 seconds worth of what it's like to have a mind that's out of control. And then after 20 seconds, you'll lose that, you'll get caught up again. And then as soon as you remember, you step back again. And you start taking responsibility for understanding and seeing that mind that you have. Because my guess is that mind, that busy, out-of-control mind that you have, is starving for attention. It really needs you to attend to it and to see it and feel it. More important than seeing it, to feel what's there, feel what drives it. And if you don't kind of turn and really feel it and sense it and be with it, it's going to be very hard to develop attention further. Okay. So, isn't it nice? I hope it's nice that to have a different word than mindfulness. I gave you the word attending. We practice attending. Some of your neighbors can ask, what do you do when you go to IMC? So, oh, I attend. So, thank you.